This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, joined as always by Bradley Chambers. One of our sponsors tonight, in fact our only sponsor tonight, is our friends at Jam Software, makers of the Casper Suite. We'll tell you a bit more about Casper as the show goes on, and we'll talk a little bit about Casper Focus as well. So we'll get to that in a little while. Bradley, how are you?
It's been a fantastic week. I have big news in the Chambers household, if anybody is concerned. My oldest son is potty trained.
Oh, always a good time.
Yes, I have spent probably $50 in toys to bribe him. He got a toy when he went number one in the potty, and he went number two today in the potty. So at lunch today, I went home and picked him up and took him to Target, and he bought a loud fire truck as his present. So my wife is going to shoot me. But I promised him any toy he wanted, and so I had to pay up. But
that's,
I will more than pay for
it. Ever spend.
Well, and yeah, exactly, because I'm going to save that like in a month on diapers.
Yeah, it pays for itself, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. So he goes to the church that our school is in the same building as has a Parents Day Out program, and he goes there a couple of days a week, and he was struggling with the potty yesterday, so I went up and helped him. And at one point, he did use the bathroom on me, number one, so then I had to go home and change. So it's like we brought a change of clothes for him, but not a change of clothes for me.
But no wet weather gear for you.
Yes. So good week. How about you guys?
Oh my goodness, I am so tired. I don't even know what country I'm in. I don't know what time zone I'm in. I just got back from Poland the other night, and we're recording this late, so I apologize to all the listeners for not having our show on Monday. That was really my fault because I was away at a training thing last weekend, or last Thursday when we were trying to record the show. And of all the places, we kept it going in South Africa, we kept it going in Chicago, and we failed when I was away in Scotland. So it tells you something. My throat is wrecked. I am drinking coffee while we record because that's the only thing that's going to keep me alive. School holidays are next week, cannot come soon enough, but let's keep it going for now.
That's true. Yeah, I've got a cold, and it's that time of year for weather changing and all that good stuff. So I've got
tea
here.
And the clocks are going to change too.
Oh gosh, that always confuses me.
So we'll probably forget to record the show at some point in the next couple of weeks as well.
That is true.
It's bad enough the clock's changing, but if our respective countries could at least agree to change them on the same day, that would be very helpful. But that's not even a thing either.
Exactly. What is it? 2 or 3 weeks?
I think there's 2 weeks. There's 2 weeks difference between when you change and when I change. I think we go first and then you. If only we had a one world government, we could get these things right.
That is true.
Nothing would go wrong with that.
So what do we have on the docket for today?
Okay, well, we're going to talk a little bit about staff development, which is something I've been thinking about recently with some of the conversations I've been having. There's some exciting information about 802.11ac from Aerohive, our friends at Aerohive, which is, this is the Wi-Fi equivalent of iPhone going 64-bit, I think. It's not necessarily exciting right now, but it's exciting for the future. And I have here in the list, Bradley, some transition notes from you.
Yes. Talk about some of the things we've learned from going iOS 6 to iOS 7 and just some of the things from Snow Leopard to the Mountain Lion that we're, just still working through.
Okay. So you want to get into it with the Aerohive stuff first, and then we'll talk transitions, and then we'll do staff development to round it out?
Yeah, that'll work. Cool. So as many of you know, Fraser and I are both Aerohive customers, and I know we've got many listeners that are Aerohive customers. So if you're not, hang on with us. We'll have some technical talk as well, not just about their specific products. So on October 1st, they did release their 802.11ac access points. They have the 370 and the 390. The main difference between the two is that the 390 allows for an external antenna. So, like, if you really needed greater range, or it's not really an outdoor access point, but if you use this for like a gym or just a bigger area. So, just some tech notes about it. The although 802.11ac is only 5 gigahertz, these access points support all the various speeds and specs. So, there's a 2.4 gigahertz radio that supports 802.11b, g, and n, and then the 5 gigahertz supports 802.11a, n, and ac. Both of these are three-stream APs. Now, you may be asking yourself, well, I don't have any 802.11ac devices on my campus, and so why would I even care about this? Well, you know, you may not, but I'll tell you this. If you have some, you know, congested areas, just by some of the way the new radios work and some way some of the new technology works, even dropping in an 802.11 AC access point in an area with only 11 in clients, you should see some improvements in terms of easing that congestion. So that's just something to think about. Even if you're you know, happy with your current deployment, it might be a good idea, like in your library or media room, you know, in the gym or conference room, things like that, you can ease some congestion. So we probably won't look at moving completely to 802.11 AC for another couple of years. There is two parts of AC. There is a wave one and a wave two. A lot of the huge speed increases that we've kind of been reading about are coming in wave two, and that's probably realistically going to be in 2015. So, you know, my recommendation is if you deploy 802.11n, say in 2007, 2008, you might want to look at upgrading to 802.11ac. But like if you are, you know, like you and I, Fraser, that we have pretty modern 802.11n deployments, mm-hmm. you might want to hang off and maybe just hang off until Wave 2 comes out in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, our EarHive deployment is only just coming up for a year old right now. So I think we're going to hang on to that for a while. Now, obviously, for our school, it heavily depends on how and when AC comes to mobile devices, because we don't have enough laptops or desktop computers that we would see a huge benefit, except in, I can think, maybe one or two places in the school where the congestion argument might be a case for getting one or two of these things. But for most of the classrooms, the big question is, you know, when or ever will we see, you know, iPads coming in with AC? Now, we've obviously just signed into another 3-year lease with iPads running 802.11n. So it's going to be at least 2016 before we start thinking about whatever's going to happen next for our Wi-Fi. But I think we're set for now, and I'm quite happy to sit and wait just for a little bit on this one.
Yeah, we're in the same boat. Of course, you know, kind of this reminds me of 2007. All, you know, 802.11n was all the rage, and it was really new. And we got some time. We're in the same boat. It'll be 2016 before I have the mass majority of our devices on 802.11ac. So we're happy to wait. Now, Wave 2 is going to be really exciting because it should bring what's called multi-user MIMO. And if you're not familiar with kind of how Wi-Fi works, it's really taken us back to the old hub days where Wi-Fi is technically a shared medium. So imagine that, like, wired switching is, let's say you have a 24-port switch. Well, if you're all wired into Ethernet, each of you basically have your own door into the network. Well, wireless right now is you're basically all sharing one door because you have that access point kind of plugged into one door, and it's a shared medium. Well, multi-user MIMO gets us kind of closer to wireless switching in terms of how it handles basically the airtime. So that's really exciting. Now, again, that's still in, you know, being worked on and developed, so there's no guarantee that I'll come in Wave 2. But that'll be exciting. And, you know, 802.11ac, the spec can call for 8 spatial streams. So if I say it's a three stream radio, you know, 802.11ac can technically do 8. We may never get to 8 in AC, really, because we had 4 in the spec for N and we just never got there. It was never feasible. And here's the thing too. All your iOS devices are single stream devices. So they're not even a 2x2 device. Like, my MacBook Air, for example, is only a 2-stream device. And so the question really, it's not always about speed with Wi-Fi. I know that's the biggest thing people want to talk about with AC is, you know, we're getting up to closer to a gigabit. You're really there on a, like I know the, I did some testing with a external card and I got up to a, I think it was close to 900 megs on my data rate. Of course, that's not throughput, and that's one of the trickier things with Wi-Fi marketing is it's all built around the data rate, but most people are concerned about the throughput. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm most concerned about density and battery life on my iOS deployment. So one of the reasons that single-stream devices are still prevalent with our handhelds is it's just about battery. And because it's like, how much faster do you need your iPad to go on the network versus the battery trade-off?
Yeah, and at some level as well, is the limiting factor to your user experience network speed, or is it actually the CPU? And I don't know if you saw, Bradley, there was an interesting video where somebody had sort of done the same test on all generations of iPhone back to the original one, and they were doing things like loading a web page, and what they found was that they were all on the same network, but the ones with the faster processors actually ran much faster. It seems an obvious thing to say, but what they were showing there was that it wasn't actually, even on like quite early iPhones, it wasn't the network that was a limiting factor as much as the actual CPU performance for rendering a web page and so on.
Yeah, and you know, if you went and measured kind of your throughput of your APs and how much speed they're using, speed isn't your biggest problem on your current wireless network. Like if you've got a well-built modern 802.11n network, you're not maxing out on speed. I can almost guarantee you. Now I wrote a blog post a couple months ago about the title of it was "Let's Talk About the Wi-Fi Bake-Offs." And what a Wi-Fi Bake-Off is where schools will bring in like three or four different vendors and basically build a test for them. Say, all right, we're going to put this client on laptop A on APA and put laptop B on APB, and we want to APB and transfer a file from one to the other. And whoever transfers it the fastest gets the business. And like that's not everything. Speed isn't everything with Wi-Fi. So, as you know, I'll post links to the article in the show notes, and that's just something to think about. But I'm one of the things I'm most excited about with AC is the move to 5 gigahertz only networks. I'm really excited to get 2.4 out of the building. Main reason is, if you're unfamiliar with how 2.4 and 5 gigahertz work, is basically there are channels. So 2.4 has three non-overlapping channels. So if you can remember back to our Linksys router days, you'd have 1 through 11 on the channel listing. Well, only thing that doesn't overlap is 1, 6, and 11. Like, you know, 2 overlaps with 1 and 3 and vice versa. So you only have 3. Well, with 5 gigahertz, depending on the country you're in, you might have anywhere from 9 to 23 non-overlapping channels. So it just makes density easier because you don't have to, you know, kind of plan as tightly on the channels, because and so you can put more APs together and not worry about co-channel interference.
Yeah, that's going to be good for schools that are... you know, our school is a very old building, so it's kind of almost easy to do Wi-Fi for us, because you just put an access point in every classroom, and because the walls are so thick, nobody can see the signal from any other room. So it, you know, it killed us the first time we tried it, but then we sort of changed our thinking about it. But for I guess newer buildings and buildings which are much more permeable for radio waves than older buildings like ours, that's going to be very, very helpful for them.
Oh, and it's just, you know, much easier, of course. As you mentioned, we don't have any Apple mobile devices with 802.11ac. And particularly the interesting one to me was the 5S. And I thought originally we would see it. But then the more I thought about it, I understand why. And I wrote a blog on this. Imagine that I write a blog on everything, I guess. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But I wrote three reasons why I didn't think that Apple included 11ac in the 5S. Number one, as you can imagine, is battery life. And, you know, Apple kind of has this like pendulum where they're, you know, they will sacrifice a little bit, but they don't want to take a battery hit on everything. You know, we saw that with like LTE and Retina. You know, they shrunk the components, but it's really just to make the battery bigger. And so it's really possible that the AC chips just drank more battery than the, you know, really mature 11N chips.
Yeah. And, you know, battery life is everything, really, isn't it? It's essential. That you can't, I guess the thing is, you can't go backwards in battery. So if you're going to put in one component that powers up the battery or eats the battery, rather, if it's going to be Retina or LTE, then you have to hold off on something else.
Well, and if you ever like take apart an iPad, take off the back, it looks like they basically placed the chips and then like poured a liquid battery in there and let it set up. It's every nook and cranny, there's battery. So. Yeah. Second thing was size, and obviously the size of these chips shrink over time. But, you know, again, as we mentioned with the iPad, it's jam-packed. The iPhone is even more jam-packed. So if the AC chip was even slightly bigger, Apple's got to find somewhere else to shrink. And it's just, again, they didn't see the ROI for their customers on that.
Yeah. I mean, at some level, I kind of wonder, you know, would I accept a slightly thicker iPhone if it could have a better feature? And it's almost to the point where I'm starting to wonder if the answer is yes to that. I mean, the iPhone 5 is a nice case and everything, but sort of think, you know, if it was 4, you know, if it's 3 millimeters thicker, would I care as much as if I could have more battery or AC or something like that? So I'm starting to wonder if thinness isn't exactly everything that we need to care about.
Well, because a lot of people say that's the reason that the Samsung phones have gotten so big, mm-hmm. is because they don't know how to shrink the components down small enough, and so they make the screen bigger so they can fit more components in.
Yeah, that's an interesting possibility, and of course, a bigger screen also gives you more space to put a battery.
True. Lastly, it was cost. I mean, obviously, these 11N chips are much cheaper than the AC chips, and so... you know, could they buy the chips in the quantity they need, and could they get them in the right devices? You know, because you wouldn't want AC to slow down the rollout of the 5S because, again, they're having enough problems as it is, you know, without a new networking chip.
Yeah, I mean, they've already got one thing that is very apparently quite complicated and difficult to build, which is the Touch ID sensor. So they've got their hands full with that. And I guess what you're sort of looking for is, when does the day come when AC just becomes a standard feature of the mid-market Wi-Fi chip or whatever? And Apple obviously do their own custom silicon for certain things, but they're, you know, I think their focus is really on the processor technology right now rather than additional radio chips, for example.
Well, and I think they can afford to play the slow hand here. And this reminds me of back to 2009, and the 3GS only had 802.11g support despite 802.11n being ratified. So it just feels just basically the same thing. And Apple knows it can wait a year. It can build, you know, we expect the iPhone 6 to probably have a slightly different design than the 5. This is kind of the TikTok release. So they can go into the iPhone 6 planning knowing they've got to fit that AC chip in there. The chip's going to come down in cost. It's going to get smaller, and it's going to use less battery. And so if you look at it kind of thing, it almost, if you think about all this, it almost would have been surprising if Apple had encoded AC, because they really don't, you know, through the TikTok, going back to that model, they generally don't release new communications technology into their talk releases, where the tick release is kind of like a big new release, like the iPhone 4, the iPhone 5. Mm-hmm. And the talk release is like a minor upgrade. Intel used that for years. They just, you know, the LTE came in the, you know, what it came in the iPhone 5. And, you know, not the 4S. Everybody was thinking the iPhone 4S would have LTE, and it didn't. And they put it in the next year. So I would bet that we'll see AC in the iPhone 6. You know, the question will be is, you know, does it come to the iPad first?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And it's possible that it could. I mean, I think at the same time, you've got to look at the, I mean, timing is everything, right? So is 802.11ac a differentiating feature this year? Probably not. I mean, I don't know what it's like in the US, but certainly in the UK now, pretty much everybody's getting their Wi-Fi from their ISP. So they'll put in a cable modem box or a DSL box, and it has Wi-Fi with it. And almost everybody I know now is just using that. Nobody's going out to buy an additional access point for their house unless they've got a really big house. Or they're crazy like me, which is another explanation. So, I mean, those ISPs are not proactively rolling out 802.11ac right now, because, in fact, most of the connections they're selling are not fast enough to justify it. Because for most consumer applications, and of course iPhone and iPad are absolutely consumer technologies, there would be no essential benefit. Because, you know, if you've only got a 20 meg line or whatever, you know, why push that so hard? So I think it's one of these things where it'll come once it's kind of it's part of the standard package, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be a thing. It never seems to be Apple's way to take a new technology standard and say we're the first with this thing, but you know it comes along when it comes along, sort of thing.
Well, that's true. And you know, going back to that cable modem example, I was at a friend's house the other day and he had an AT&T UVerse, which is their big new technology. I think it's semi-fiber. It was a 2.4 gigahertz in router. I mean, not even a dual band 5 gigahertz. It was 2.4 gigahertz only. And, you know, again, with AC on laptops, you would think, well, that's going to give you better throughput on internal resources and, you know, transferring things to shared drives. And that's true. But most of the time with iPhones and iOS, it's about getting things off the internet. And so, again, if you've got a 20 meg cable modem, you know, having a faster Wi-Fi center doesn't really help you speed-wise.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, no normal person has internal things that they share with other computers. You know, it's just everybody's tablet on the web or whatever, you know, streaming Netflix.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you've heard about this, but one of the big supermarkets in the UK, Tesco, have just brought out their own tablet. And I was having a look at it the other day. It's called the Huddle tablet, H-U-D-L. And what I thought was interesting about it was that if you look at all the marketing material around this tablet, it's obviously running Android. It's Android 4 point whatever. And it looks like a fairly, it looks like a Kindle Fire or something with a colored back on it. It's very generic 7-inch Android tablet. But the marketing all around that is purely about entertainment, whether that be games or Tesco have a streaming video service that you can subscribe to and music and so on. And the whole focus of it was just pure entertainment. And I thought that was quite interesting in the context of Apple, obviously, announcing the rumor of the new iPad announcement in a couple of weeks' time, that Apple are going with free iWork for new iPad customers, whereas all these 7-inch Android tablets are really starting to focus heavily on entertainment rather than productivity. And I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch over the next 18 months or so.
Yeah, and of course, it's interesting that supermarket that would be putting that out. Of course, there's rumors that Target here in the U.S. is working on their own movie service, and it seems like everybody's trying to grab a piece of every part of the entertainment pie. Everybody thinks they're going to be left out.
Yeah, I couldn't say that I was much of a retail strategist at all, but it's interesting to see that tablets are sort of becoming, or at least these low-end 7-inch tablets are becoming kind of, they're being used for other things than being computers, if you know what I mean. They're sort of being used to generate a relationship with the customer, or you know, keep people in some kind of fold, whether that be as a Tesco customer or as an Amazon customer. I mean, Amazon have clearly done this with the Kindle Fire in a big, big way, because they actually have all of these properties already, at least in the US, if not abroad. So it's interesting to see why people are using tablets, because I don't really feel like, you know, Tesco are proposing to give you a computer. You know, it feels like very much a portal into services. And I think that's an interesting dynamic as well. You know, how I think people are still trying to figure out what tablets are for. And I think maybe the answer is they're for different things. Probably.
Well, and it's been interesting to watch you and Benedict Evans on Twitter kind of talk back and forth about, you know, all these companies that build things for the U.S. that don't work overseas. And if you look at Apple, it seems like they're one of the only companies that's trying to do a worldwide tablet blanket.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is one of the key differentiating factors for Apple, is that they have, well, they don't have everything everywhere. I mean, that's for sure. Certainly volume purchase is probably one of the most, well, I think the most constrained one is iTunes Radio, which is one of the few things Apple does. It's only in the U.S., at the moment, but there was even news articles just the other day that that's coming to the UK quite soon. Volume purchase is not broadly available. Certain components of the iBook store and certain parts of the App Store are not always available in some countries, but the number that are available versus the number of countries where, for example, even Amazon have got much of their Kindle Fire package available is much, much greater. I mean, in the UK, I think we get about half of the value proposition for the Kindle Fire, and we are the next best served market for our Amazon stuff after the US. So, for example, Prime subscribers here, all we get is the Kindle lending library. If you're a Prime subscriber, we don't get the TV service or the movies or whatever. And then I think it rapidly falls away after that for Amazon as well. So it's we're pretty well served with Apple. Although there are some countries in Europe where you can't buy an Apple TV, for example. I can't remember exactly which one it was, but it was a country I was in recently where they were complaining to me that they were having to smuggle Apple TVs in from another country because Apple didn't sell them in their country. I think it might have been, I want to say Denmark, but I can't remember why I think that. It might have been Switzerland. Not sure. Somebody can email me and tell me.
Yeah, the Apple TV is one of those really interesting devices. It's kind of like I don't want to say the ace in Apple's pocket, but maybe it's like the Joker, that they've been quietly building up these, you know, millions and millions of customers that have Apple devices connected to their television. And yeah, they're not replacing the cable box yet, and they're not, you know, maybe replacing everything in the classroom yet, but they're highly useful. And it feels like with another couple of software updates, this thing may be, you know, as big as the iPad, maybe. I don't know. Maybe not. But it just, we love ours. I have three of them, and we absolutely love it.
Well, I think that, what I see is that the Apple TV is killing interactive whiteboards in school. It is just ruining their market. And, you know, people ask me all the time, they say, well, what How do you connect to your interactive whiteboard? What do you do with your interactive whiteboard? And the answer is, when you've got an Apple TV, an interactive whiteboard is just a really nice white surface to project onto. And we've got them in our school, but they are disconnected. And nobody has plugged into any interactive whiteboard for about a year and a half now, if not longer. There are some segments and some applications where I think Apple TV is doing an amazing job of just essentially wrecking somebody else's business. But for its actual intended purpose, I think AirPlay is really the ace in the hole, if you like. It's not ready yet for massive deployments. And of course, a lot of sysadmins have been complaining about how difficult it is to, you know, bridge bonjour traffic across subnets and things like that. And there are some technologies that help a little bit with that, but none of it's perfect just yet. iOS 7 obviously does a little bit more to try and help the management and the connection of Apple TVs. So I think Apple TV is already big. You know, I don't think it's kind of a sleeper product. I think it's here and it's working for a lot of people and people are using it heavily. And I know that schools is one of the biggest markets for Apple TV after just, you know, casual Netflix subscribers in the home. But in businesses and in school, it's becoming a really big thing.
Well, because we've got three Promethean boards, and if you think about what an iPad is, it's like a miniature Promethean board in their hand.
Yeah.
And rather than having to have a board that you have to share, and they can do multiple pins, but it just feels like, I know I've got friends that work at Promethean dealers, so I hate to say that, but it just feels like that they're being commoditized by the iPad and the Apple TV because it's just, you can do pretty much everything on an iPad that you could do on a digital whiteboard. And digital whiteboards are not cheap in the slightest. You can buy a lot of iPads for what you buy a digital whiteboard for.
Well, that was what I was about to say, was that they've not helped themselves by being so unbelievably expensive. You could actually go out and buy every teacher an iPad, or every classroom an iPad, shall we say, just on the money you would save by not buying an interactive whiteboard. You could probably do two or three classrooms for the cost of one whiteboard with an Apple TV and iPad solution.
Yeah, I agree. You want to take a sponsor break?
Yeah, let's talk about Jamf.
Our friends at Jamf, back again. They've been great partners with us here recently, so we appreciate them sponsoring the show. Jamf software provides ICT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies, such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in education organizations. Now with Casper Focus, they place these powerful technologies directly into the hands of teachers that work with students every day. Casper Focus allows teachers to quickly gain attention, conduct secure exams within an app, and select specific Apple TVs assigned to the class, and choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay right from Casper Focus. So it's simple stuff. It works well. They're focused on Apple technology. So if you use Apple technologies in your environment, Jamf Software is the partner that you want to look at. Learn more at jampsoftware.com. So we thank them for sponsoring the show again this week.
So I got my Amazon EC2 bill for the amount of traffic that we did during our startup phase.
Yeah.
It was, shall we say, bigger than expected.
How much? Or can you say?
Well, it was $90. For the month. Yes.
But if you think about it, do that over 12. I mean, it's like the price of, it's really not that expensive if you compare it to the price of a new Mac.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is the thing. You've got to think about what you're comparing it to. I mean, we had a couple of, maybe a week or a bit, where we were on the third tier of service. And we're down to steady running on the, I think it's the small, it's called the one above micro. I think it's going to be steadier, but also, I think I haven't looked at the breakdown yet, but the combination of the amount of traffic that went to it versus the number of hours spent in the larger size and so on. So do you want to talk a little bit about transitions? How's it been going?
Yeah. We've mentioned on past shows that our staff has moved from Snow Leopard to 10.8. Of course, they're about to be behind because Mavericks will be out soon. But I want to talk about just some of the ways I structured that, if anybody that's going to be doing that soon. So how I structured kind of our training, it was, try to break it up into, five sections. First thing was we talked about iCloud. Because that's the big buzzword. You know, everybody knows about iCloud. Apple's done a great job of getting the word out there. Mm-hmm. But I explained to our staff what it does, what it doesn't do, and what we do with it. And really, we don't do anything with iCloud as a staff because, again, I can't create accounts for them. I can't control those accounts. And when I say control, I mean get troubleshooting from Apple, reset passwords. I can't do that. So I explained the benefits to it of how they can use it with their personal iPhones and their Macs, and that's great. But it really explained that that's not a service that we use, but they are free to use that on their Mac. And we have some teachers that do. Like, we'll have some teachers that will have their iCloud calendars that sync to their phone, and they'll have their work calendar that doesn't sync to their phone. And that's fine, and I'm okay with that. So, I think it was important to address iCloud, but not kind of put out expectations that, hey, this is something that we support.
Yeah, it's not like you're adopting iCloud in a sort of institutional sense. It's just that it's going to be there.
Yes. Now, one of the things that we did encourage them to do, and I probably shouldn't say encourage, we told them about was messages. Probably 95% of our staff has an iPhone, and so they have iMessage. Mm-hmm. So I talked to them about the benefit of signing in with their iCloud account in the Messages app. For whatever reason, I don't know if it's our school that's unique, is our parents text with our teachers quite a bit. And I guess that's in some ways good because it allows teachers to get quick messages to parents about homework and things like that. And so our parents text our teachers during the day, hey, is little Johnny sick today? He was feeling bad this morning. How's that going? Or they may text them, say, hey, don't forget about homework tonight. Or, little Johnny forgot to bring in his homework. And so I talked to them about how they can integrate their iMessage onto their computer and then not have to constantly pick up their phone. They can, as they're doing email and lesson plans, they can kind of deal with those messages almost like another inbox. And explained to them again that we couldn't support that, but it's something that is built in and should work most of the time. And our teachers love it. In fact, that's one of the ways most of the time they get in touch with me if they need help is they'll just shoot me an iMessage because they know if I have my phone with me, I'm likely to get it. The majority of the time I get it at my computer, but it's kind of a way they can get through the, kind of the clutter of just the everyday inbox and I can get a, hey, we need you, pretty quick kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, how did you handle the caller ID settings for messages and iMessage? Did you take teachers through that?
No, I just, we let it, kind of said, hey, you can have it set to, come from your email address or from your phone number and showed them the same place on their phone where they can change that. Talked about the benefits of, why they might want to do their phone number or their email. Mm-hmm. Most of them do their phone number because I don't have their personal emails into my address book and it always comes up as their name. So again,
that's the default, isn't it?
It is, and our parents have their phone numbers already anyways, and so I guess it's just a different culture. I actually, I'll get text messages from parents occasionally. Like, a lot of times it's not even about school stuff. It's like, hey, when's a new iPad coming out, or where's a good place to sell our old iPhone? Just, questions like that. Yeah. And that's fine. I have no qualms about that. School pays for my phone, so.
That's a deal.
So, we talked about notes and reminders. Again, that kind of went with the iCloud stuff. Showed them how they can sync, but again, explained to them that if it doesn't sync, I can't necessarily help them. But we have a lot of teachers using reminders, especially the location-based reminders. I taught them about how to use Siri and say, look, when you're at home, you can say, remind me when I get to work to grade papers, and it can do that.
Okay.
Next thing, probably the biggest, was scrolling. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the scrolling when they all hated it at first. Then I told them to try their iPhone, and it works the same way. And then most of them are okay with it, but some of them changed it back. I showed them how to change it, and that's been that was one of those things. After a month or two of Mountain Lion, they got used to it.
Yeah, yeah, that's not been as big a deal as people have made out it was going to be.
No, and of course, a lot of questions about no disk drives. And what we did is Amazon sells. Like their Amazon Basics brand. Are you able to buy that in?
Yeah, they've got most of that range over here. Yeah, I have some lightning cables from that.
The 6 foot one's great. $15 lightning cable for 6 feet. That's a good deal. Yep. But I bought one external drive per grade level. Most of our grade levels have three teachers per grade.
You're talking about an external DVD drive?
DVD okay. drive. It said, look, guys, we're not buying one for everyone. You'll use it less than you think. And so I'm going to buy one per grade. I think I paid $40 per grade, and I've not really heard any complaints since. I don't know how often they're using them, but they're just kind of like an easy $40.
So this transition is also, just so I understand as well as the listeners presumably, that The transition from 10.6 to 10.8 is also as a consequence of you rolling out MacBook Airs in replacement for plastic MacBooks. Is that right?
Yes, that's okay. Yeah, I probably shouldn't assume that our listeners knew that. Yeah, good call. Yeah, we went from 2009 white MacBooks to 2012 model 13-inch Airs. So,
nice jump.
Yeah, nice jump. No, here's the great thing. Like this is like from an admin side. This is where this was wonderful. Had a teacher last week. Now I have two spares. I always buy two spares when I'm on deployment. So I've got two in the box Airs. So teacher called me and said, "Hey, my computer when I turn it on, it basically shuts right back off." So I go get it. It is doing that. Go into recovery partition. It won't repair. So something's up. So what I do is I get a Thunderbolt cable out, put the bad Mac into target disk mode, and it boots into that. Migrate the computer to one of my spares. It does it in 5 minutes. Mm. So literally in 5 minutes, I have all of this teacher's data on a new computer.
Nice.
So I take that computer. It's one of those things. I can order the parts for them, but since they're under warranty and it's just a spare, I'm thinking I'm going to let the local Mac reseller deal with that. Mm. So I took it over there and let them fix it.
Yeah.
Figured might as well. Of course, we've got the two-stream airport cards, as we mentioned, and the majority of the access points we're using are the Aerohive 120s and 121, so those really work out perfectly.
Okay. So those are also 2x2?
Yes. No, points. And again, again, why is there no three-stream? It's battery life. The MacBook Air is a computer that's built for battery life, so that's the reason. Now, one of the things that, since we're a big Google App school, and then we use RenWeb as well for our student information system, transitioning to a new OS is easier because those services stay the same. It's not like they're moving from iCal on Snow Leopard to iCal on Mountain Lion, which is different. They're just logging into Google Calendar.
They don't change. What you might prefer to say is that they change at random times that are not under your control anymore.
Exactly, and they'll make subtle changes.
The other day.
Yeah, they make subtle changes. And I'll get emails about that occasionally, but thankfully a lot of times they're so subtle, people just don't even notice.
Yeah, that's for sure. I've not had any complaints. There was a slight tweak to the UI of Google Apps 2 weeks ago, maybe. They changed a couple of things about the header on the documents, but nobody complained to me either.
So that's it on the desktop side. Do you want to talk about the iPad side now, or do you want to wait on that?
Yeah, tell me how it's going with you. I mean, for us, it's been fine.
Yeah, it's the same. It's I don't know. I don't really know why. I did 81 iPads in 2 weeks. Basically, sent out an email to our staff, said, "Hey, this is what we're changing. Here's a link to Apple's website on iOS 7. But I really think it's 95. Like I mentioned, 95% of our staff have iPhones, and they were already using iOS 7 on their iPhone. Mm-hmm. And so that's just they're just used to it. And functionally, it's still the same. It may have a different skin on it, but it's still this core iOS.
Yeah, I mean, we saw similar things. Now, what I did was obviously there's a half of the school that's under my control through Configurator, and half of the school that's the kids are managing themselves. And what I've seen is that I've done all the ones that I control. So they're all over in iOS 7 now. Some of the kids in secondary, they actually haven't upgraded yet. I'm not sure why. I haven't spoken to them yet, but there was a proportion, and I think probably the younger kids actually, who were like, "Oh, can I get iOS 7 on the first day?" And then the older kids more, I think maybe, are they being conservative because they've got important work on the device? Possibly. Or do they just not care at all? Possibly. You know what teenagers can be like at times. They're too cool for iOS 7 in some cases. So I think we're probably at about 80 devices on iOS 7, and the rest are still sitting around iOS 6, 6.1.3, I think they're probably running. But no issues, just apps, few apps needed updated. I had a couple of issues with a couple of apps, but nothing that wasn't fixed within a day or two.
Yeah, it seems like everybody was like full steam ahead on this update. Apple users and developers.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that perhaps I could have done a wee bit more with their teachers to kind of prep them for a couple of changes in iOS 7. But I think, for the most part, they handled the transition fine. But I think what they haven't done is they maybe haven't assimilated the idea of things like AirDrop, for example. So I know that there's one or two teachers who are using AirDrop actively in the classroom, but a lot of them probably don't even know it's there yet. So I think I want to do a wee bit with our teachers the next couple of weeks just to highlight the new potential rather than to support, interface shock because of what's new. Okay. Anything else we want to talk about just now?
No, I think that, it kind of struck me. I probably should do the same. I should not just think that iOS 7 is just a skin upgrade. There are some new functionality. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've been trying to do more this year is, a lot of times, we get in the habit of just email. And, when school's starting to wind down, 3:30, 4 o'clock, just go into a teacher's room and say, hey, how's it going? Anything I can do for you? Even if there's nothing, that goes a long way with people. You're not coming there to change anything, not coming there to teach them anything. Just saying, hey, how can I help you? Because again, maybe a question like AirDrop might come up.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a wee bit interesting because we have a kind of mixed deployment of iOS devices in the teachers' hands. Some teachers are running, most of our teachers, I think, have got either iPad 2 or iPad 3. There's only one teacher I know of has got a fourth generation iPad, and only one teacher I know of is sort of actively using their iPad mini, although a couple of us have also got one. We're not typically bringing it into school. So there are some teachers who will get that, some teachers who won't. For me, the only device I have that's AirDrop is my phone. So a couple of times I've been asking kids to AirDrop things to my phone rather than to my iPad for schoolwork, just because that's the one that works. So I'm very much looking forward to a new iPad when it comes out. We shall talk about that another time.
Yes, we will. So yeah, that's that wraps up kind of our transition. It's going well. It's the last transition we'll make for a few years, or maybe a year. I guess we'll probably go to iOS 8. We will probably stay on Mountain Lion. We will probably not move to Mavericks unless it was super inexpensive, just because even a $20 upgrade, of course, our entire, our entire deployment can get rather expensive, and especially if there's just not enough that's going to directly affect us, in the classroom.
Yeah, you got to just take that for what it's worth. If there's something there that's big, then okay, but otherwise not.
I'm not doing it for, Apple Maps.
No. Although iBooks, maybe.
That's true.
That may be a thing.
That's true.
I haven't really played with it very much myself, but to my mind, I think the thing that's most interesting about having iBooks on the Mac is as a having the same ebook rendering engine for testing the books that you're making on your Mac as much as it is for actually reading from books.
Well, and the books that are built for iBooks Author are, they're normally only compatible with the iPad. So if you've got a textbook that was built for iBooks Author or built, with iBooks Author, you can now view it on your Mac.
Absolutely. So here's to that release. Coming soon. Okay, should we wrap it up?
Let's do it. Sounds good. That's sorry for the late show, everybody, and we'll try not to let it happen again.
We'll do our best. Okay, speak to you next week.
Have a good week.